Welcome back. Our guest this week is the governor's budget director, Dave Masseron. Our lead story, $10 billion in federal COVID aid coming into Michigan, and the governor and Republican legislative leaders have a problem. On the OTR panel, Stephen Henderson, Lauren Gibbons, and Chad Livengood sit in with us as we get the inside out off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much and welcome back to this edition of Off the Record as we get the inside out with Lauren Gibbons and Chad Livengood and Stephen Henderson. We're going to talk about what the governor had to say this week about COVID coming back and also that $10 billion coming into the state of Michigan. Whoa, that's going to be fun.
Governor Gretchen Whitmer was quietly watching Michigan's presidential primary election results last March 10th from the executive residence when the phone rang. It changed everything.
We're here today because we have identified the first presumptive positive case of coronavirus in Michigan.
1 year later, that one case has grown to over 659,000 cases with over 16,600 deaths and counting. And while 2.6 million residents have received the vaccine so far, the positive COVID trends of the last 3 weeks are beginning to evaporate.
Test positivity has actually increased to 4.1%, up from 3.4% 3.5 weeks ago. The case rate is now at 114 cases per million and has also increased over the past 3 weeks. We are also starting to see a slight increase in our hospitalizations, and a little over 4% of inpatient beds are being used to take care of patients who have COVID-19. We are also identifying more and more of the new variants. We've already identified over 500 cases of the more easily transmitted B.1.1.7 variant.
On the economic front, when the new president signs the new federal COVID relief act, Michigan is in line for a whopping $10.6 billion, including $1.78 billion going to metro cities and $1.9 billion to all 83 counties. State government is in line for $5.6 billion.
I'm grateful for President Biden's American Rescue Plan, which will invest in the American people and allow us to rebuild our economy and ramp up our vaccination efforts.
The governor reflects on all those COVID deaths that could fill the Breslin Arena, but then she adds this.
It's MSU and U of M against COVID. Upers and downstaters against COVID. Republicans and Democrats against COVID. Three safe, effective vaccines against COVID. America against COVID. We're all in this together.
But this critic of the governor has a different take.
Pointing to the fact that we're united is laughable, and I'm not sure where what state she's operating in, but I think it's pretty clear that we haven't been united in quite some time, and much of that is because of the way she's operated.
All right, we're back now. Stephen, let's talk about this $10 billion coming into the state of Michigan, and we have the same old song between the governor and the Republican leaders. What's going on?
Well, I mean, we've seen this story play out over and over, depending on who's governor and what party they're from and who's running the legislature. You know, the tragedy here and what makes this difference is this is literally life and death. When you think about that, those numbers that you were included in that report, 16,000 deaths from COVID in Michigan, that's more than we lost in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. In this state. This is serious stuff. And the idea that it has been reduced to, you know, this tug of war political power struggle by one side of the aisle. I mean, I think you can't say that this is a both sides problem. The governor has been doing what she thinks needs to be done to keep people safe. The legislature has decided that they should have more say over that. They have stood in the way of some of the progress we should have made as a way of trying to wrest that power from the governor. But again, if you think of the people who are suffering because of this, the people who are losing their lives, the people who are losing their jobs, their businesses, it's unconscionable. I have never seen anything quite like this.
Lauren, and adding to the intensity of this issue this week was the letter from the chairperson, Republican chairperson of House Appropriations. Basically, is ultimatum too strong of a word to use to describe his letter? He basically said to the governor, I'll talk to you and negotiate on this $10 billion, Madam Governor, but you got to sit down with us and start sharing some power. What did you make of that letter and its impact on where we are?
I don't think it's ever a good sign when there's not a negotiation happening on the budget between the legislature and the governor. And that is, you use the word ultimatum. I think that that's probably a fair statement at this point. Both chambers and the legislature have indicated that they're not really willing to fork over all of the federal money without some policy-related legislation limiting the administration's authority, primarily the health department at this point's authority, to enact COVID-19 restrictions. And we're already seeing that play out. There's a lot of money that's left unallocated. And, you know, as you alluded to, there's a lot more money coming in that the state will have to allocate. That's on top of the regular budget cycle. So Republicans have indicated that the budget is really going to be the battleground for their disagreements with the governor on COVID-19 restrictions and ongoing COVID-19 response. And that, as I said initially, that's not really a great sign for budget negotiations or for getting this federal money out to residents.
Chad.
Tim, lawmakers think that they've got the two issues that really have made the governor squirm a little bit here. That's the closure of high schools back in November, forced closure of high schools by the health department, and also the cancellation of winter sports that got delayed. I mean, this was an issue where the governor clearly caved a few weeks ago, back in February, and after saying they weren't going to allow winter sports until March, they decided to open it up. So the legislature is basically saying they want these powers to close schools, shut down sports, taken away from the department. An easy out here is for the governor is to just say yes and let local health departments make those decisions. We have some pretty aggressive local health departments in Michigan. They've gone against some of the local the wishes of locals from Lenawee County to Ottawa County and other places throughout this pandemic and done quarantines and shutdowns of college campuses and things on a local scale. That's what the legislature is asking here. And I think a lot of this war could be averted if the legislature would stick to that. And that's one of the biggest problems here is the legislature has not negotiated in good faith at several junctures during this pandemic with the governor. But if this is what they want, then maybe this is what they should get. And then we can move on to deciding how to spend $10 billion, which is quite a bonanza for state government coming out of a recession.
Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have some sort of break in this at some point. I mean, we can't continue on this path forever. And when you think of what the public health officials are saying about what we still face, I mean, that's the thing that I just keep coming back to is that it's easy to start saying, well, we're going back to the world now. You know, we've beaten COVID. There's a vaccine. We're going to start reopening the state and reopening businesses and getting people back to normal life. But you've got these new variants out there that every few weeks there's another one, and we're not sure what effect the vaccines will have on them. You still have lots of people sick, and you still have people dying from this. We are not through this crisis from a public health standpoint yet, and so the money to try to deal with some of these things is even more critical. And so this logjam in Lansing looks more and more obtuse and insensitive to the residents that they're supposed to be representing.
Chad, why can't the governor just invite the legislative leaders in and say, here's what I would like to do vis-a-vis this problem? What do you guys think? Have a conversation around the table. She ultimately is still the governor. She has that emergency authority. Is that going on? And if it's not, isn't that a simple solution to this? Look, they say we're an equal branch of government. Treat us such.
Yeah, Tim, it's not going on. And that's because of some of the things that have been said and done, in particular by the Senate Majority Leader, Mike Shirky. I mean, let's not forget, like a month ago, we were seeing a video of Mike Shirky talking about wanting to have a fist fight with the governor on the lawn of the state capitol. I shouldn't laugh. This is almost surreal that this is what our political leadership has kind of gotten down to, is they're talking in sort of in violent terms about the governor.
All right, so don't look at Chad. Here's the solution. Don't invite him into the room. Ask for some other Republican to come in so they can get something done if that's a problem. Yes? No?
I mean, are you familiar with Mike Shirky's ego?
I'm going to take the Fifth Amendment on that, okay?
Yes. Well, here's the other question. Who would that be? Who else in the Senate delegation would you put in the room to get a better result? I mean,
I got one. Wayne Schmidt.
Okay.
Wayne Schmidt.
Would the rest of the Republican caucus support the idea of Wayne Schmidt being the person in the room negotiating with the governor?
No.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's an extreme. There's such an extreme nature to. To the GOP politics here, and it's a caucus that, you know, as Chad points out, is now led by a guy who is not only aligned with the very people who have been threatening the governor's life, but has been terribly duplicitous about all of that. I mean, he's saying one thing publicly and to her, and then saying something really different to these really dangerous. Elements. I mean, when that's your leadership, I think it's really hard to suggest that the governor owes, you know, a reasonable conversation with him about who should be in charge of this. I mean, it really does strain reason to think that should happen.
Lauren, your take on this. How about Jim Stamos, Senator Stamos, Chair of Appropriations Committee?
You know, I just want to say, regardless of who is in that leadership position, who is negotiating with the governor, I think Stephen brought up a lot of great points about why this money, why the budget at this point is so critical to the state's population. And so regardless of who is in leadership, it needs to happen. Like this logjam is not something that is sustainable long term. And not only from a public health standpoint, but from an economic standpoint, all the state's top economic experts have said that the reason that Michigan isn't in a worse state, at least from a fiscal standpoint, obviously at the local and individual level, a lot of people are still hurting. But from a state revenue standpoint, things aren't as bad as they could have been because of the federal money that's already come in. So if the leadership at this point is not allowing additional federal funding to come in that could help for future state fiscal years, that could be a really big problem. So I think, you know, regardless of who is at the top, regardless of who is negotiating with the governor at this point, they need to do so in good faith and they need to do it quickly.
All right, let's a good segue into introducing our guest now, the guy who's supposed to be breaking this logjam, Mr. David Masseron. David, when you read that letter from your good friend, Mr. Albert, did you see that to be an inflammatory letter or an invitation to dance?
Well, Tim, first, let me say it's a thrill to be on the show at this point. 30 years ago, I remember my dad making me... Watch the show on Sunday. So I'm going to do the same and make my son pull it up on his tablet and watch us. So I appreciate you letting me carry that tradition forward. The letter is not anything different than the chairman has said to me repeatedly. And, you know, we're going to keep working. I do want to say, you know, we've had a long discussion. I've listened to your panelists. There is some good news that came out of last week. We were able to get a direct care wage increase that the governor called for at her State of the State done. So those workers can get the raise that uh, their additional wages that expired at the end of February. We're able to open up on Monday the rental assistance program so that people can apply then, which had been stuck. And the department will be able to load people's food assistance benefits relatively soon as a result of the federal changes. So although the rhetoric has been bad and the process has been bad, there's been progress.
Chad.
Dave, what about the aid to schools that got vetoed? There's going to be a redo here? I mean, the House has already passed the bill out, but do you think there's a way to get that money to schools pretty quickly?
I hope so. I mean, I think we need to get all the money out to public schools, and we're going to continue to work with the legislature. I would have liked to have been at the table with them this week negotiating a supplemental. Obviously, that hasn't happened and may not happen soon, but we need to get that money out. We need to get the rest of the food assistance money out. We need to get the rest of the testing money into a position that the department has the flexibility to respond as the course of the pandemic shifts. So hopefully we can get working on that real soon.
Lauren?
Much has been made, especially from the Democratic side, about the possibility of some of this money going back to Washington, D.C. Is there a date certain that Michigan could lose federal funding if it's not allocated?
Yeah, each different stream of funding has different timelines in which the funds need to be spent. The school districts have, you know, a little under 15 months, maybe 14 at this point, to spend that money. And it's a substantial amount of money for some districts. The rental assistance money, I think it's 60 or 65% needs to be spent by October 1st. Luckily, that program will be going at full speed, early next week. So all of that funding, depending on the source of the particular stream of funding, is subject to return if we don't use it.
Stephen.
So, Dave, you used to be the CFO here in the city of Detroit, and you guided the city's finances through much of the pandemic. Now you're at the state level. Talk about, though, how critical this new money from the federal government is to cities in particular, given how hard hit they have been both economically and from a public health standpoint.
Stephen, I think that's a great question. Obviously, the work the governor did in advocating for this bill and making sure that Joe Biden was president is really paying dividends to our cities and to our state. There are a number of programs that the city had to cut in order to balance its budget. They were painful cuts that the mayor led the way in helping us do when I was in that seat. And some of that activity can restart. But more importantly, we know the world fundamentally changed as a result of the pandemic. And we're going to need to make investments so that when we get to the other end, we can thrive. And this funding will give the city, I think it's about a little over $800 million for the city to make those investments. And at the state level, there'll be a substantial amount of money that additionally we can make investments in our workforce and across the board to try to get to the other end of this pandemic in a way where everybody has an opportunity to be successful.
Mr. Masseron, let me follow up on Chad's question. You said you were going to spend that money to the schools. Does that mean you're going to spend it and ignore the language in those budget bills that the governor has to give up her power and then let the Republicans haul her into court to battle that out?
So I know that this became a louder issue than traditional last week or this week. I'd say first, I mean, from my memory, going back to John Engler and Dick McClellan, the governor's counsel and the Department of Attorney General, whether it be Frank Kelly counseling the Republican John Engler or Mike Cox counseling the Democrat Jennifer Granholm, has always looked at boilerplate and given departments guidance on how to implement it. That process is still underway, and when that process is done, we'll obviously make public whatever the results are. At this point, we really don't know how the analysis will shape out, and we'll continue to look at it. But more importantly, the easiest solution to this problem is for us to get to the table and actually do another supplemental where we work together on making sure our kids have the ability to go to school in person in a way that's safe. And that's what this funding was intended to do, and that's what we should do.
Well, I want to make this clear. You don't believe the language that the Republicans sent you about taking away her power will hold up, correct?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think we're in the process of reviewing it with Mark Totten, the governor's legal counsel and the Department of Attorney General. Normally that review would have taken place prior to the signing event, but in this context, we signed it a day after we got, the governor signed it a day after we got the bills because we needed to get that direct care wage increase out there. We needed to get the rental assistance money out there and we needed to keep building the vaccine infrastructure. So we didn't have the normal deliberative process with respect to how we're going to give departments guidance on boilerplate.
But if the AG comes back and says it's illegal, you'll spend the money.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, my focus is working with the legislature to get the money appropriated. If and when that happens, that will be a different day and a different set of decisions for
Chad.
Us to make.
Dave, you got $5.6 billion coming from the $1.9 trillion stimulus bill that the president signed yesterday. Is this a time to maybe do something big, radical? I'll throw a couple ideas out here. Bury Jefferson Avenue along the riverfront, maybe the 375 project, bring it to grade. Build a new rail tunnel, buy the Ambassador Bridge from the Maroons. I mean, something like huge and the infrastructure that the state would never have the money on its own to do in normal times.
I think, Chad, yeah, this is a chance for us to try to make some transformational investments. And we need to look at all of them. We also need to keep in mind an infrastructure bill is likely to follow relatively soon. And how do we address all of the different priorities and needs that our population has as a result of this pandemic as we go forward. I do want to point out that the bill had a built-in tax cut. So off the bat, there's probably a $600 million revenue loss to the state on a one-year basis. So we're going to have to deal with that at the same time we figure out how to program these funds. There's also additional funds coming for schools. And I think given what we've seen in this pandemic and its impact on working mothers, there, one thing we should also focus on is there's over $1 billion coming in childcare as well. We need to work together with the legislature to figure out how we situate these investments as a way so when we're finally on the other end of this terrible, more than year-long event, we're able to ensure that everybody has an opportunity to thrive.
Lauren.
There's $1 billion for childcare for Michigan alone?
Yeah, it appears that way. I should say that we're still reviewing the bill and looking at the analysis that the department's put out, but it looks like it's going to be about that amount.
Lauren.
How does the current roadblock with negotiating the supplemental vote for budget negotiations for this year's state in 2019? We saw quite a bit of animosity regarding the budget process. It seemed as though 2020 went a little better. What are your anticipation for this future budget cycle?
Obviously, there's no question that this process has not been what we would have liked. I'll say this, you know, I think I've started to develop a good relationship with both chairmen. We share the same end goal. With Chairman Elbert, we both have young families. We're both outdoorsmen. I'm hoping he's going to invite me hunting so we can even further build that relationship as we move forward. It's possible with the current process, this will be a very rough process that will take time. But at the end of the day, all of us know where we need to get to, which is we need to get shots in arms. We need to get as close to regular as quickly as we can. And then we need to make necessary investments to help everybody deal with what is going to be a fundamentally new reality when we get to the other end of this pandemic. And because we all share those goals, I'm going to try to be optimistic that we'll be able to work together to get this done.
Mr. Master, maybe you would not take a food taster with you if you go hunting with this gentleman. Is that a good idea?
You know, Chairman Elbert is a passionate, has passionately held beliefs, but, you know, his beliefs are based on, you know, what he thinks is right. And I believe he operates with integrity. Everything he's told me he's going to do, he's done. And my hope is that as we move further along in the course of the pandemic, that we're able to develop a more healthy and rational relationship. Look, we have real problems. We have funding to deal with those problems. It's time we all get to the big kid table and actually try to get results for the people that live in the state.
All right, very good. David, you're going to hang on for a little bit of overtime, but before we close off this program, we'd like to just pause for a moment to commemorate the passing of the Attorney General Frank Kelly in our state of Michigan at the age of 96 down in Naples, Florida. Anybody who has followed Mr. Kelly over these years knows that he's the longest-serving AG not only in the state but in the nation, 37-year run. After that, he became a lobbyist. I thought it was interesting. One of the groups that he loved to beat up on was Consumers Power Company way back in the day, and one of the first clients he signed on was with Consumers Energy, which means you can go forward. So we give our best to the survivors of Mr. Kelly, who was a great guy to cover, and there'll never be another guy like Frank Kelly. Peace to you. All right, we're going to take a little time out here for some closed credits, then we'll return with Mr. Masseron. More questions during overtime. If you'll please go to WKAR.org, and we'll see you there.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.